Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic and guide. He joins us weekly. The films are It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley, Honey Don't, and Caught Stealing.
I'd like to start off today by talking about a new documentary called It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley. This is, of course, about Jeff Buckley, and he was a pop singer. And I'll admit at the get-go here, I was never into Jeff Buckley. But it's a pretty interesting documentary anyway. It has a lot of interesting facets to it. He had an interesting life, although it was a pretty short one. His father was quite a popular singer, Tim Buckley. He had a real career going. He had a lot of fans and all that, a pop singer. And then, unfortunately, he died when he was only 28 years old of a heroin overdose. So that's very unfortunate, obviously. And the son, Jeff Buckley, was very aware of this. And in fact, he, according to this documentary, he was kind of struck by the fact that at one point that he had outlived his father when he passed 28 years old. Well, unfortunately, he did not outlive his father for very long because Jeff Buckley died when he was only 30, just 2 years older than his father had been. Under some strange circumstances, he was swimming in the middle of the night, and it's, again, mysterious circumstances. It's not clear exactly what happened, but he had a certain involvement with drugs himself, and it probably was connected with that. In any case, Jeff Buckley had one great big hit album, and it was a very big hit album, and it had a tremendous number of fans, and none other than David Bowie called it the greatest debut album in history. So that's quite a kudos, and a lot of other people like the album a lot, too. The trouble, according to this documentary, that arose out of that is that Jeff Buckley didn't really... He wasn't sure he'd ever be able to equal that. He'd never be able to make a similar achievement or even to create anything like it. And so he spent quite a while working on his next album. And in the meanwhile, he did a tremendous amount of touring. And as everybody knows, touring, whether you're a rock musician or a dancer or whatever you are, it takes a lot out of you. So he was living a very difficult and hard life doing the touring stuff and working on a new album and then trying to get away from everything and moving away from all of his previous contacts and trying to just focus on his music and on getting another album in the works. And he pretty well succeeded at that. And he apparently was making good progress with it. And he was having a lot of pleasure in some of the achievement that he was now finally succeeding in. But again, it didn't last because he was dead by the age of 30. And it was a very, very difficult situation for him. The movie deals with a lot of people in his life. His mother is a very important presence. Apparently, he was very, very close to his mother. And there's a girlfriend or two, and they're talking heads, and they express themselves in very moving ways and very informative ways. And at various points in the film, we're coming back to them a lot. We certainly find out about some of the people who really inspired Jeff Buckley and who he looked to as musical role models. And they're a diverse group. There was the Indian musician, Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. He was really, really admired Ali Khan's work tremendously. And he was really into Led Zeppelin. I can remember a time many years ago when being really into Led Zeppelin meant that you weren't really sophisticated in your tastes. It meant that you were obviously in tune with popular taste, but you weren't necessarily sophisticated. But boy, Jeff Buckley really loved Robert Plant and Led Zeppelin. And you know, he had a certain respect for David Bowie, of course, and so forth and so on. But again, none of this seemed to be able to keep him going consistently. He came out with this one album that was regarded as just genius by an enormous number of people, and then was never really able to get beyond that and actually complete a second one. Now, if he had lived longer, I think there's every chance from the evidence the movie gives us that he would have completed a second an album. Maybe he's just one of these people who takes his time. One of his big hits was his cover version of Leonard Cohen's Alleluia, which, by the way, Jeff Buckley felt was not about God, but was about sex. In any case, Leonard Cohen famously used to take a long time to even just complete a single song. That was a part of just the way he worked, and it paid off wonderful dividends for him. So I think none of this, by the way, what I just said is in the movie. It's my own observation. But Jeff Buckley might very well, if he had managed to live longer and keep away from big trouble and all of that, he might very well have created a second album over the course of time and maybe many more after that, and maybe there would have been a lot of terrific work. In any case, that didn't happen. And that's why this movie is called, in a sentimental way, It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley. His life was over, but his fandom persists, and he still has admirers, and I'm sure this movie is going to put that first album of his, called Grace, by the way, really back on the charts, because it's a very nice movie, and even if, like me, you are never really into Jeff Buckley, you'll learn some things from it, and it has some nice, interesting footage of live performances by him in various places, and you hear a bit of his music, and it's a nice documentary. There have been great rock and roll documentaries in the course of time. Martin Scorsese has made more than one excellent one about everything from George Harrison to Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones. Then there are classics like Don't Making Sense, which is about Talking Heads and David Byrne. So, you know, there's some great, great, great rock and roll documentaries. I don't think that it's Never Over Jeff Buckley is one of the great ones, but it's a nice one. And I think a lot of people will enjoy it and get something out of it. Now I want to talk about a couple of movies I like less and which are not documentaries at all. And the first one I'd like to get to is called Honey Don't! With an exclamation point. This is the new movie by Ethan Coen. Now, Ethan Coen and his brother Joel Coen, of course, became really important American filmmakers as a team. The idea was that Ethan would produce the movies, Joel would direct the movies, and they would write the movies together. And they had a lot of real success with that. Everything from Barton Fink to Raising Arizona to No Country for Old Men, various movies of varying degrees of quality, but the overall quality was really good. Then they split up. And they haven't worked together now for 7 years. And Joel Coen has done nicely. He did a very good movie version of Shakespeare's Macbeth. And he's done some other stuff, and he appears to be making real interesting movies on his own. Ethan Coen has not been clicking, I'm afraid, as a solo filmmaker. And Honey Don't confirms me in that opinion. I just don't think it makes it. I just don't like it much. Now, Ethan's previous movie was called Drive Away Dolls. And by the way, it was a real flop. It made something like $5 million and people didn't see it. However, Ethan regards Honey Don't as the second part of a trilogy, and we'll eventually see if there's a third part coming along. And Honey Don't is like Drive Away Dolls. It's sort of a frantic and even frenetic sort of a movie. And our main character is named Honey. That's what she's called anyway. And she's kind of old-fashioned in certain respects. She does not have a computer. All this movie is sort of a neo-noir in some ways. So it seems to be expecting us to take her as a kind of against-the-grain hero. So, okay. She has no computer. She's a private investigator. And in this case, she gets very heavily involved with a case which involves a minister, a preacher, a televangelist, a guy who runs a local church and who presents himself as a very, very pious and reverent sort of a fellow who believes in nothing more than God. Now, in one of this movie's really unoriginal points, yes, this evangelist, this preacher, this pastor is a fraud. He has everything wrong with him. He's totally into sex. In fact, he's totally into kinky sex. And he has a whole lot of women who provide him with the kinky sex that he really likes. And he's involved with some drug stuff. And oh, he's just a terrible, terrible person. So we have this tried and true, I think all too tried and true theme of the hypocritical pastor. And yes, Honey gets involved in a case that involves him. And eventually there's a whole lot of of running around and fast driving and crazy things. And there are other characters too. Honey has a sort of a strange family. She's got a sister, and the sister has a daughter, and the daughter has a boyfriend, and none of them are very nice people. They all have very, very serious problems in various ways. And Honey, by the way, is a lesbian, and she can't seem to really develop a steady, strong relationship with a woman she's not fallen in love with. And that's another little subplot in the film. So we have a good cast here. We have Margaret Qualley playing Honey. We have Aubrey Plaza playing the woman who Honey gets a crush on. And we have various other mildly interesting actors. Well, those are not mildly. They're very interesting actors. Chris Evans is pretty good as the pastor. But again, I just feel that this movie, Honey Don't, tries to substitute energy and racing around and hopping up and down and shooting guns and driving cars fast and stuff like that. Substitute that kind of thing for a really clever plot or for really clever plot twists or for characters who can really engage you as human beings. Ultimately, Honey Don't, I'm afraid, is just a bunch of sound and fury, and it doesn't signify a whole lot. I have been acquainted with Ethan Coen in my time, also Joel Coen. I wish him well. I wish he would make good movies. I think that Joel is on the better track right now. I hope that Ethan manages to get himself onto a better track as well. But my gosh, if Honey Don't is the second part in a trilogy, I sort of shudder to think what the third part might be like. I hope it's better. So that's all I'll say right now. As for recommending a movie, I gotta say, Honey, don't bother with this one. And I'm afraid I have to say the same thing about our next movie, Caught Stealing, which is also by a very considerable filmmaker. It's by Darren Aronofsky, who's done some poor work in the past, but he's also done some good work in the past. And he's an interesting filmmaker who does different kinds of things. Black Swan is a pretty effective thriller. The Wrestler, I think, is a very, very interestingly and well-acted movie. On the other hand, I think The Whale is terrible. And Noah is not much at all. My favorite, I think, of all of his movies is one called Mother, which is a totally bizarre, strange, over-the-top, weird movie that really works as an act of sheer creativity. But Caught Stealing is not that at all, I'm afraid. It just is a movie that doesn't make it, and it's another film which, like Honey Don't, just substitutes a lot of jumping up and down for real cleverness. So here we have a guy named Hank, and his trouble starts when he simply helps out a guy who lives near him in his apartment building. He gets asked by his neighbor, whose name is Russ. He's a British punk with a great big mohawk on his head. I got to run back to England for a little bit because of a family emergency. Would you look after my cat? So, okay, Hank says, sure, I'll help you out with this. Well, it turns out, believe it or not, that there's a strange, mysterious, important key hidden in the kitty litter box. More important than that, there are a couple of Russian thugs who are after Russ, who is now not there, because they want that key and they want what they can get with that key. And now Hank has the key. So the next thing you know, they come by and they beat up Hank. Hank almost dies. Hank's in the hospital. He gets a visit from a police woman, played by Regina King, by the way. Movie's got a good cast. And he's still so upset that he hardly knows what to do. And eventually he gets out of the hospital and he has to sneak out because he doesn't have any insurance. And then the Russians come back and they're after him and they're going to beat him up again. They got to get that key and they got to get whatever they can get from that key. It turns out that that neighbor across the hall was a big, big drug guy who was dealing in drugs. And that's what the key is all about. And the next thing you know, things are getting more and more frantic and more complicated. And on top of that, there are a couple of ultra-Orthodox Jewish brothers, played by Liev Schreiber and Vincent D'Onofrio, who are also thugs, and although they're also very religious, they sort of don't want to beat somebody up on the Sabbath, who are also very much and who are sort of semi-comic characters. I have to say that with both Joel and Ethan Coen, Jewishness has played a part in more than one of their movies. Our filmmaker of the moment here, Darren Aronofsky, is having a great deal of fun with Jewishness in this movie. And these characters are my favorite parts of Caught Stealing. Again, Liev Schreiber and Vincent D'Onofrio, good actors, and they have a good time playing these guys with their ultra-Orthodox garb and their ultra-Orthodox beards. They are, for me, far and away the most fun parts of the movie, the most interesting parts of the movie, the most surprising parts of the movie. Aside from that, I'm afraid that Caught Stealing, which, by the way, makes a little flicking in the direction of baseball, which is what the title also refers to. Our main character has been a sometime baseball player. Caught Stealing just is another film which just does way, way too much with snappy editing and zippy camera work and a whole lot of over-the-top acting, which is all meant to substitute for what I really wanted, which is real human-seeming characters and a real interesting plot that would really get me involved and want to follow instead of just deciding, oh my gosh, this is all just too much, too fast. Again, a lot of sound and fury, very, very little being signified. If it were possible to watch the movie and only see those two Orthodox Jewish guys played by Liev Schreiber and Vincent D'Onofrio, you'd have a really good movie. Unfortunately, there's all that other stuff in there too, and it just did not catch my fancy. So that is my, I'm afraid, somewhat negative story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley, Honey Don't, and Caught Stealing.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.